Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back, and it is now or never, and we're doing another Monday follow-up. And as a matter of fact, we've got a lot on our plate, and as a matter of fact, I've got a lot on my plate. So I'm going to be doing a lot of things between now and the election. I do everything I possibly can to help. And as a matter of fact, I've said this time and time again, you reach out, I will do everything I can to help. Barring, you know, sacrificing, you know, things that I just can't, like my family time and that type of stuff. So if it's something that we can squeeze into the day, I will make every bit. I'll even do, you know, extended times. What I'll do everything I possibly can, folks. I really mean this. And so I know that there's a lot of people that are coming and getting help and asking for help, and I'm happy to, and I've got room to do more. Unfortunately, I've got set times and so forth. So those of you who, you know, want to have, you know, a very specific day and time, it may already be booked. So if you're looking, you're thinking about getting, you know, onto a mentoring schedule or something like that, then the faster you get engaged, especially if you're running for office. Now, my priority is trying to give candidates, those people who are willing to take on the heat for you, to serve us, to save us from the throes of tyranny, then we need to do everything we can to help them become successful. Okay, so if we're going to help them, or if I'm going to help them, then I need you to, you know, at least be a more, or not that you aren't, but be a little more empathetic with what it takes to get things done and to get people reasonably informed so that we can all start agreeing. So in other words, I'm going to end up having to do two shows on given days. Well, what does that mean? So typically, the shows that I have hard scheduled are content shows. And today is a content show, believe it or not, because tomorrow is the 2nd of July. And I'm going to cover that today, because the 2nd of July is when we really cover the Declaration of Independence, because technically that's when they kind of closed it and signed, the bulk of Continental Congress signed the Declaration of Independence on the 2nd. For whatever reason, there was some final things that were done on the 4th, but for all intents and purposes, the Declaration was done on the 2nd. It seems that when Thomas Jefferson, just so you understand the story here, when George Washington was president, the nation did not really have a defined July 4th celebration. I mean, many people kind of, you know, had a little bit of time to, celebrate the good old 4th and so forth, but it became a little bit more significant as time went on. And as a matter of fact, Thomas Jefferson, and here's the irony, because here's the guy that wrote the Declaration of Independence, and he was the guy that became the third president and actually, excuse me, called for a national celebration, because as the president, he basically could, and the president did have the latitude of calling upon, not creating a law, not making it a national holiday, that required Congress, but he basically called upon the nation to celebrate the 4th of July every year and to make it a standing, voluntary, you know, not obligation, but voluntary contribution in taking, set aside the 4th of July to recognize, remember, and celebrate our independence. So as we look at it, you know, he kind of ingrained, or he kind of is etched, you know, a remembrance of him, it sounded like a Thomas Jefferson holiday, because that's his document for the most part, it's his document, because Thomas Jefferson was kind of given that latitude from Benjamin Franklin and John Adams. Now, it's not that they may not have contributed. The bulk of the work was done by him. Now, the final, what you read as the Declaration of Independence, is different than what I read. And instead of reading the entire Declaration, because I've got too many other things to cover, such as the Electoral College, because we were kind of talking about that, and I want to kind of go back into that, but there's some other things that we need to talk about, and I want to close out on conservative entertainers and conservative organizations and conservatism in America. Folks, I am telling you now that the word conservative is just another word to obfuscate the Constitution. Why? Why is it that we, because, oh, well, conservative, what does the word conservative mean? It means to preserve what we have right now. Is this what you want to preserve, this mess that the progressives have created over the past century plus? You want to preserve this crap? I say no. I say we reclaim the legitimate government that we still have before it's too late. So, I believe that the word we need to be talking is constitutional, not conservative. And so I don't want, and I don't like poking people in the eye, so I try to find ways of doing it eloquently to say, you know, maybe the question we should be asking ourselves or something like that, or alluding to leadership and saying, are we really leading when we're hiding behind a word like conservative instead of using and leading on the word Constitution? Anyway. The Declaration of Independence. Let me dive into that before I dive into everything else, because today is the first, and tomorrow we've got the ratification debates. And oh, by the way, let me get back to this. I am going to be doing interviews, and I'm going to be doing special content shows where I'm actually going to double up content. And so the reason why I'm going to be doubling up, because I'm going to be going through the Kentucky resolutions, the Virginia resolutions, Madison's notes on the Virginia resolutions, as well as the Kentucky 1799 resolutions, because there's two, right? There's 1798 and then 1799. So we're going to cover those five primary documents that talk about what to do when government is violating the Constitution. So what's going to end up happening is you're actually going to, if you go to my podcast page on the, you know, on a given day, you may actually find two different days or two different podcasts for that given day. One will be the aired podcast, and the other one will be one that's just being posted because it's important content. In other words, even though I'm going to tell you that the ratification debates, they are the most important thing, giving you information, or actually, because it's all about helping people. So let me explain one of the best ways to help, because it really helped Paul. And I think if Paul had the time to come back onto the show, he says, you know, that time that we spent reading together, I learned more than I ever have regarding the Constitution and what we need to be doing. And so, and that's what happens, folks. That's what happens when you read the scriptures, right? The more you read the scriptures, especially when you read the scriptures as a group, like a study group, right? And technically, that's how they do it in college. You have learning teams. Everybody kind of goes off and reads. And then when you don't agree with what you read, you kind of read it again as a group and go, oh, you know, I didn't look at it that way. Instead of trying to recite what you thought you read and what you thought it meant, sometimes it requires the learning team to actually read, you know, what they're supposed to be learning to act upon and so forth. And so this is how you get smart. And so this is what I do in my mentoring calls and so forth. And I not only have mentoring calls, but I actually have calls in helping campaigns. And one of the campaigns that I'm helping, as a matter of fact, I'm hoping to help a lot of campaigns. It's not that I, you know, not helping. I just don't want to inflict myself upon you. I'm humbled if you ask, and I appreciate the opportunity to try to help in any way I possibly can. And so it is a blessing at this point in time that I have in being able to share my time with you, and I hope that it's a mutually beneficial time. Anyway, so there are candidates that have stepped up and said, I would like to get involved. I want to get some help. And so the whole point is we're going to be reading through these things regarding interposition. We're going to be reading through documents, debates, what have you, that is important content, the Constitution, so that as we do this, I'm helping develop public servants, people who are campaigning to become a public servant. So I'm going to introduce you to Tammy Young. Tammy Young is challenging a lawyer, and I think it's the, well, I don't have to think, I can just look it up. And so bear with me here. I believe it's the House District 27 in Wyoming. So she's running to unseat a lawyer who claims to be supporting the Constitution, but she voted against the bill that would have enforced compliance of the Constitution. Now, I don't know how one person can actually think that they're supporting the Constitution and that legal obligation you're required to support the Constitution when you vote against a bill that would demand compliance to it. How do you resolve that? How do you rectify, you know, what you did with what you're supposed to do? And so, bottom line, we need to start holding our public servants to task. That's the whole point here, folks. That's what we have to be doing. So that's what we're going to be doing. I'm going to be bringing Tammy on. I'll be bringing other people on. We're going to go through the same stuff, and you're going to hear me read some of these things over and over again. And I apologize. And if it gets to a point where it's becoming that redundant, then that will be the second show instead of the primary show. But for now, because what we're doing is we're really rerunning the Paul and my reading of the ratification base, which is why I'm trying to augment them as well. But on the augmenting shows, if I get to a point where I have that many live shows and I can just hear, I have a producer, and it is such a blessing to have, you know what, I don't have a pseudonym for her, but let me just leave it at this, and she knows who she is. She listens to this all the time, and I have the highest respect for her. And I love her like a sister. There's lots of people that I'm just so blessed with working with because they're such good people. And I've met a lot of brothers and sisters in this patriotic movement. Folks, we are not living in the times of Lot, where, you know, there is no hope. There's no other person that can be saved. There are all sorts of people that are so frustrated, they're just over consumed by bad information, if that's an appropriate expression. It's not, but in other words, we're overwhelmed by so much bad information that we can't get our head straight. It's almost like you're looking at this collage of confusion. These mentoring calls, I believe, will actually help make sense of that collage so that you can get that collage organized to actually create a very useful image for you. Now, I mentioned a friend of mine, Dr. Carlevel, who wrote a book regarding the living in the age and surviving in this age of, you know, too much information overload. And so we all have to kind of do what we can to overcome this. But anyway, I will be forced to start posting multiple shows. That's good, and I'm going to be working harder, and I hope that you can have a little bit more empathy for my scatterbrain, because I've said this time and time again, I don't read well. I don't even have conversations well because you can't talk fast enough because my brain, and I think everybody's brain is like this, or, you know, that's a bad rut we all get into, because as we see things and as we do and as we act, we really think that everybody's just like us, and we're not. We're also uniquely different. So I appreciate the fact of my differences, but I think that I'm not that different. I think that, you know, when you're sitting here having a conversation, you know, you can kind of go into somebody's head and go, are they really looking at me? Or are they looking at that, you know, spot of mustard on my tie or whatever? Yeah, because sometimes we get distracted. But the worst distraction are the distractions in your own head as you're trying to resolve and deal with problems. And so as I start thinking and going, okay, so what am I going to say? That's usually when I get barraged with all of these different thoughts, or when I'm trying to read something and I'm reading a lot faster than I can actually say them or articulate them. Or because you don't want me to read really fast like the Evelyn Wood reading dynamics, or like what you would hear in the legal copy at the end of a commercial, because that's just all sped up and nobody can really comprehend what that is, you know, what somebody's saying. So the point is that it's going to be tough. It's going to be a hard row, and I'm up for the challenge. I'm hopefully asking that you were equally up for the challenge to maybe listening 2 hours a day of this show. I'm hoping that most people are starting to recognize that this show has nothing to do with me making money or me trying to get you to give me money. This has everything to do with empowering you and giving you the information you need so that you can take back your government at your county and begin the process in your state in holding the federal government accountable. Because bottom line, that's our job. It's we the people. We have to do this. It has to be a movement. So getting into the Declaration of Independence, because that's what I told you is I want to do first. I'm actually posting this. I've created the PDF, and it will be up by the show tomorrow. I promise, because I haven't got it up yet. As we're talking, and this is almost, I mean, I'm literally recording, and we're doing this live right after this. So I apologize for some sound qualities and any other inadequacies regarding the show, because I'm literally losing time to get things done. This being said, what we're going to cover in the Declaration is not the entire Declaration. I'm going to read to you, I don't want to read the words, but there are some parts of the Declaration of Independence that were changed that you need to understand. How they changed the words in some ways to make it a little more succinct, and in other ways to make it politically correct. There were wholesale removals of paragraphs that were all about political correctness. And if you read these documents, you'll actually get a better insight of the paradigm of at least Thomas Jefferson. I mean, when you start reading and you start understanding, as you read his unfiltered, you know, what he actually says, then you'll realize that this guy does not have a high regard for slavery. It was, as he called it, we have the wolf by its ear. We can no longer hold on to it safely, nor let it go. What are we to do regarding slavery? And so one of the reasons that maybe he was overseas because he couldn't figure that out, not that he couldn't have done that. He was doing great work for us overseas. But there were another body of men that were actually forming and creating the Constitution. This is why we went through the notes on the Constitutional Convention, where they had frank conversations about slavery, and most of the men there admitted, the southern states, the three southern states, that there's no way this will fly. We can't do this. But Virginia was willing to push the issue. Virginia wanted to see the whole Union get rid of slavery. So don't tell me otherwise. And so as we really look at how things were laid out, this gives us insights that you just don't get unless you read these documents. So I'm going to skip over these words, but you're going to see when you pull this in, you're going to see text that's highlighted in green and text that is highlighted in yellow. The text that's highlighted in yellow are words that were removed and the text in green are the words that were inserted. Did you know that Thomas Jefferson used inalienable with an I? And the political correct insertion was unalienable. So who was correct or who was more appropriate between inalienable and unalienable? And this all depends on how you and later on how we define those two words. But we got these little phrases of how they go from expunged to alter, unremitting to repeated, you know, little things like that. And so as you go through the first two pages, you'll find that, you know, it's just minor little changes, maybe making it a little more succinct in some ways, and in some ways just clarifying. Like Thomas Jefferson put in states in the Declaration of Independence. He considered that these colonies were states. Well, the politically correct Continental Congress changed it to the colonies. Anyway, as we kind of go into this, you'll find that there is big segments towards the end, the very bottom half of the document. And this is what I want to read to you, because these things were removed. And they're talking, this is where Thomas Jefferson is talking about the king, King George, right? King George at the time. And he said, he has incited treasonable insurrections of our fellow citizens with the allurements of forfeiture and confiscation of our property. He has waged cruel war against human nature itself. This is what was removed. Violating its most sacred rights of life and liberty in the persons of a distant people who never offended him. He's talking about the people of Africa. Captivating and carrying them into slavery into another hemisphere. Stop right there. What he basically just said is, you know, the colonies were subjects to the king. When people say that America invented slavery, the America that we have today, the United States, that it invented slavery, that is one of the most disingenuous and most dishonest statements a person could make. Because actually, these men, as they went into this Constitutional Convention, believe it or not, they framed a document that was actually getting rid of slavery. Even though the southern states said, you know, you have to respect slavery, and they created these little protections, over time, they saw that the necessity, if they were going to save slavery, they needed to violate the Constitution, and that's what happened in 1820, less than 50 years from the Revolution and this Declaration. Less than 50 years, 45 years, 44 years, whatever. Anyway, so Thomas Jefferson is pointing out that King George was literally creating this tyranny upon these unsuspecting, you know, people of Africa by exploiting the slave trade and basically keeping its existence alive. And he goes on and says, captivating them into slavery in another hemisphere, in North America, or to incur miserable death in their transportation thither. This piratical warfare, in other words, he was calling them a pirate, piratical warfare, the opprobrium of infidel powers, is the warfare of the Christian, king of Great Britain. Let me repeat that. This piratical warfare, the opprobrium of infidel powers, is the warfare of the Christian King of Great Britain. Now, going into a break, so that means that when we come back, I'll read the last of this, and I'll read the last of these other paragraphs that were kind of removed. Big parts were removed at the very end. As a matter of fact, when I look at how much green and what was left, it wasn't even a page. So anyway, we will be right back after this promo. Okay, so please stay tuned. Thank you so much.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so getting back to what we were covering. So this is where he basically lays out that King George is literally waging tyranny and unlawful rule. This is where he goes back. This is Thomas Jefferson again. Determined to keep open a market where men should be bought and sold, he has prostituted his negative for suppressing every legislative attempt to prohibit or to restrain this execrable commerce. Execrable, however, E-X-C-R-A-B-L-E. Anyway, what he's basically just saying is that here the states, the colonies, have tried to legislate to stop the onslaught and the bringing in of more blacks into slavery. Stop it. They wanted to stop this. And he's basically pointing this out. And that this assemblage of horrors might want no fact of distinguished die. He is now exciting those very people, in other words, the slaves in America. He's been basically now working and inciting them to these people to rise in arms among us and to purchase that liberty of which he has deprived them by murdering the people on whom he also obtruded them, thus paying off former crimes committed against the liberties of one people with the crimes which he urges them to commit against the lives of another. In other words, he's showing the duplicity of the monarchy and how evil the British monarchy really was. Now, here's the question. When we look at, because I've talked about, you know, how this globalist plan, you know, has kind of enrooted itself because Britain was the final empire. It's still the empire. And how did this get basically subverted? And how did this become so evil? In the same breath, believe it or not, within the evil of the empire, the British Empire, breaking away from it was a nation of liberty. Breaking away, even though there were even challenges and actual outright duplicity of some Americans like Hamilton, trying to do evil. What made it through the gate, what crossed the finish line, was truly his document in governing and preserving liberty throughout the land and proclaiming liberty to all people. So, please don't forget that even though we may have all these problems, the lies that we're being told in our origins is incorrect. Go back and read that one paragraph. That's a huge chunk. But the next paragraph, half the paragraph's been removed. Basically, this is what he says. And I have to read this, so I'm going to read the part that was there, that was left there. A prince whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant is unfit to be the ruler of a, this has been inserted, free people. This was what was removed. Who mean to be free? Future ages will scarcely believe that the hardiness of one man adventured within the short compass of 12 years only to lay a foundation so broad and so undisguised for tyranny over a people fostered and fixed in principles of freedom. What he's basically saying is what we see our own government doing. Our own government supposedly telling us, oh, we got a democracy, we got freedom here. No, they're setting us up and closing us and locking us in. Closing us up and locking us in. So in the next paragraph, there's a big chunk that was cut out as well. And so I'll read the part that was left in. Nor have we been unwanting in attentions to our British brethren. We have warned them from time to time of attempts by their legislature to extend a, and then unwarrantable was actually inserted, jurisdiction over these our states, and this is where these our states was removed for us, over us. We have reminded them of the circumstances of our immigration and settlement here, no one of which could warrant so strange a pretension. This is all that's been removed, this part here. No one of which could warrant a strange pretension that these were effected at the expense of our own blood and treasure, unassisted by the wealth or the strength of Great Britain, that in constituting indeed our several forms of government, we had adopted one common king, thereby laying a foundation for perpetual league and amity with them, but that submission to their parliament was no part of our constitution, nor ever in idea of if history may be, that Parliament was no part of our Constitution, nor ever in idea, if history may be credited, and we have, and then this has been kind of inserted, have appealed to their native justice and magnanimity. And then they inserted, and we have conjured them by, as well as to the ties of our common kindred, to disavow these usurpations, which, and this part was removed, were likely to, instead they put in, would inevitably interrupt our connection correspondence, to have been deaf to the voice of justice and consanguinity. I'm sorry. Anyway, the next part is all cut out, folks. This is a huge chunk of this paragraph. And he goes, and when occasions have been given them by the regular course of their laws of removing from their councils the disturbers of our harmony, they have by their free election reestablished them in power. At this very time, they are permitting their chief magistrate to send over not only soldiers of our common blood, but Scotch and foreign mercenaries to invade and destroy us. These facts have given the last stab to an agonizing affection, and manly spirits bid us to renounce forever these unfeeling brethren. We must endeavor to forget our former love for them and hold them as we hold the rest of mankind, enemies in war, in peace, friends. We might have been a free and great people together, but a communication of grandeur. I mean, this, I can't believe they cut these words out. But a communication of grandeur and of freedom, it seems is below their dignity. Be it so, since they will have it, the road to happiness and glory and to glory is open to us. We will tread it apart from them, and then this is what was inserted, and we must therefore acquiesce in the necessity which denounces our eternal separation, and hold them as we hold the rest of mankind, enemies in war, in peace, friends. So that's where they asserted that one little part. I mean, they cut out a whole bunch of, I think, really good meat. Anyway, and then in the very final paragraph, the final big paragraph, they only have a very short part of this that remained. This is the part that remained. We, therefore, the representatives of the United States of America in General Council, assembled, and this is what they inserted, appealing to the judge of the world for the rectitude of our intentions. Now, this is what was also kept in. Do in the name and by the authority of the good people of these states. Now, that's what was cut out. States was cut out, and they put in colonies. And then they jumped down to solemnly publish and declare. These are the words they cut out between there. Reject and renounce all allegiance and subjugations to the kings of Britain and all others who hereafter claim by, through, or under them, we utterly dissolve all political connection, which may heretofore have subsisted between us and the people or Parliament of Great Britain, and finally do assert and declare these colonies to be free and independent states. Now, this is what they've inserted. Solemnly publish and declare, or this was kind of left as well, solemnly publish and declare that these United Colonies and of right ought to be free and independent states, that they are dissolved from the allegiance. Actually, this was what was inserted. I'm sorry to replace all of that. Dissolved from the allegiance of the British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved. And I know this may be confusing in, you know, me reading what's there, what isn't there, and so forth. When you look at it with reading the red, or not the red, the yellow, that was removed. And what they replaced it with, if they replaced it at all, is in green. And all the text that is not highlighted is the other text that actually made it through. Now, I've done my best in making comparisons between the original, you know, what Thomas Jefferson originally wrote, and the final draft, what was signed by everybody. I think this is important because I think reading the truth of what was really being said versus the politically correct version helps you really see, you know, the true spirit of most of these men. It was altered to make other men who felt less comfortable with making themselves look bad, possibly, so that they might actually look as a part of a united front. And so, to be clear, going through this and helping people understand these words, these specific words, that's why we read these documents. That's why I struggle reading these documents. And anybody that sees some of these words go, oh, that's not a common word. And so, you know, they may be a struggle, but folks, doggone it, that's what we got to do. We've got to struggle here. If we're going to be successful, it's not going to be because it's being handed to us. If we're going to be successful, it means that we have to struggle in reading things that might be tough for us to understand. They definitely talked in ways that we don't talk today, but that's okay. It's not rocket science in figuring out what they're saying and understand, wow, that's interesting. Instead of saying happy or they find joy in something, they would use the word sanguine. There's lots of things like that, you know, we just need to kind of, you know, get over and expound our vernacular so that we can actually understand what they're saying like they're talking to us in our own language. This is one of the dangers that happens when languages even evolve, because we kind of lose. And we already see this today. And everybody that's listening to this show is standing up and cursing the school system for not teaching cursive, for actually teaching bad language. I'm not the perfect example, but I'm not going to shy away from either making a mistake or, you know, making a fool of myself in trying to help us take back our government. So at the risk of, you know, being that fool, I'm happy to be your servant. I'm happy to help. And so let me get back to this, because I got about 13 minutes left. Let me get back to this concept of the conservative entertainer. You have to understand the conservative and conservative myopic organizations. This is what I was saying on Friday. They're the ones that are keeping us from turning around and fighting back. Remember, I was giving you this metaphor of walking this plank, that the enemy is trying to get us to walk this plank. You know, if you can turn around while you're going out on that plank, because nobody can, you know, once you get out over the water, you know, you do have some flexibility. You can kind of leap forward a little and turn around and, you know, maybe grab that sword and push that person into the water. I am here to tell you that the conservative organizations are the ones that are keeping us from turning around. They're having us turn towards them instead of turning around at the real assailant and actually engaging them. Oh, no, we only want you to engage this one little thing, so we're not fully engaging that person behind us. We're just basically kind of wiggling a little bit, trying to avoid the sting of the sword in one part of the back. But it doesn't matter. That sword will still sting another part of the back. Folks, if you understand the magnitude of the problem, it doesn't matter where that sword moves, it's still going to be a fatal blow. We have to stop following our passions. We have to stop, I should say, the myopic passions, thinking that one topic is greater than the others. It all matters. The entire Constitution matters. You can't cherry pick what's best. If you're going to cherry pick what is the best part of the Constitution, Article 7, hands down. Because Article 7 identifies who the parties to the compact are and how the Constitution of the federal government was created by the dignity and sovereignty of the parties. So, in other words, the power in Article 7 is rested upon the states, not the federal government. And as we kind of look at what I say, when we look at the folks who were caught, the good people that I know that are caught in the throes of tyranny in the name of conservatism, that is a huge problem. And so what we have to do is we actually have to start recognizing that if an organization is not willing to teach you about First Amendment petitions and all of the petitions that we need to be pushing into our government to reclaim our government, then they're a part of the problem. And so I'm going to read off to you these organizations, and this is where I was on Friday, reading off the American Conservative Union, the American Family Association, Americans for Prosperity, Citizens United, Federalist Society, Freedom Center, the Association for Mature American Citizens, AMAC, you know, instead of AARP, Hillsdale College, Alliance Defending Freedom, the Family Research Council. I believe I read through most of these, the Project Veritas, Prager University, Judicial Watch, Turning Point USA, National Rifle Association, the Heritage Foundation, the Eagles Forum, the John Birch Society, Tactical Civics, Act for America, Moms for Liberty, and on and on and on. All of these organizations are standing beside that plank, keeping you from actually turning around and engaging with lethal force. What is that lethal force? It is the First Amendment petition to holding government accountable for their violations, for the redress of grievances. Folks, that is the mechanism and that is the weapon. Why do you think it's added to the Constitution? And unfortunately, Madison and, you know, all of these good men didn't realize how much we would lose this information and understanding of the system that they were living in, the civility. Most people have no clue how civil of a government that they created, one that would actually, if we embrace these concepts and principles that were laid into this Constitution and the society that these men were forging, we would be going down this path of enlightenment, that all people would have this, you know, this literacy and this commonality of understanding good information and embracing it, instead of chasing, you know, the whims and the fancies and the pleasures of the moment. These organizations that I've listed, and many more to add, these organizations are incapable of supporting you in using the Constitution. They don't want you to. Most all of these organizations are funded in a way that they're not allowed to get involved. They lose their funding. I have found this out from many of these organizations, that if they started getting involved and doing what we're doing, they will lose their funding. So what does that have to say about the funding that they're getting and who controls them? This also helps you understand that when money starts getting involved, when money is a part of that organization, then all of a sudden, he who pays the piper calls the tune. Ah, now that makes sense, doesn't it? Because the people that are paying, then they're controlling you, it starts to make sense to say, you know, we don't want you solving the problem. We want you to be, you know, to appeal to people to get involved and to get frustrated with the fact that we can't solve the problem. Nobody can. If we can't, no one can. And no one will. And they're damn determined. Excuse the expression. They are determined to ensure that we don't get involved. And they tell people, as a matter of fact, I get it all the time. People start asking questions. They go to the John Birchers or some organization, say, hey, what do you think of this guy? And they'll say, oh, man, stay away from that guy. That guy, you know, he's self-serving. He's trying to make himself rich. Really? You know, if that was the truth, then it would be very obvious. But it's not. And the truth is that we're here to actually help. This one of the reasons why I don't do good endorsements over, you know, products. I don't want you to think that there are these good products out there that, you know, like Timber Nation. I used to do Timber Nation all the time. These guys are great. I just don't want you to think that Timber Nation is, you know, paying me or compensating me in any way. I've never once, and you can call those folks. You can call any of the people that I've endorsed in the past, you know, such as, I forget all of them. I'm sorry. I'd have to actually go and start looking at those different organizations to say, oh, well, what about these guys? What about these guys? You know, like Radio Dust Covers. Yeah, there we go. Ad Local, Timber Nation, Constitution Education, Fortitude Financial Coaching. Those were some of the organizations I used to promote. And I kind of stopped doing that because some people thought I was getting kickbacks. I'm not. Gary Smith is deservedly will work hard for you in helping you build a, you know, a financial future for yourself. And he doesn't pay me anything. And he's probably sacrifices a lot like I do, more than he probably should. Keith Broders with the Constitution Education. I mean, the money he makes barely covers, you know, his expenses. He can't afford to give me anything. Timber Nation, I mean, okay, this is a you know, a good-sized company. They do great work, but still, they're a small company in retrospect, and they're American-made. Custom furniture, good stuff. I don't take a penny from them. And Stan Kluett with the Radio Dust Covers, he's a small guy that just makes these things as you order them. They're all custom-made. It's on and on and on. So, I'm here to tell you folks that when you start looking at, you know, who to get involved with, if money's involved, you better make doggone sure that there's no controls and no of those, none of those people that can actually, you know, come in and pull the rug out from underneath you. any organization that basically is myopic and cannot actually make adjustments to doing what's right in solving our problems does not deserve your time. Even though it seems like, oh, they're fighting a good fight, you know, out there fighting these court battles, I'm here to tell you that we're not going to ever win in the court system. That was not the process. We do not have a judiciary form of government. We spend way too much time in court, and the fact that we do that and we're doing that is actually proving how we've been indoctrinated in making our court system a money-making rich system. Stop it. Starve the beast. So here's how simple this is, and that you can even do this yourself, but you will need to do this without their support. What we're doing is, because we got the repository of petitions, what we're doing is we're driving petitions into your local government, the government that you can actually engage. With some people, they can't get to their city or their state legislature because they're too far away. Not every state is the size of Vermont or Rhode Island. So if you're living in California, it could be a day's travel easily. From San Diego up to Sacramento, that's a good day, unless you're flying. And that's a lot of money to spend to just get up to your state capital. California is too big. It needs to be broken into smaller states. Even with our current technology of travel, it shouldn't take a day to get to your capital. I think what's reasonable is probably an hour or two at the most, at the most. So start looking at the geography to say, you know, what would it take from the outer reaches of this area to be able to reasonably, in L.A., you can't get from one part of town into the heart of L.A. in an hour or two, especially at certain part times of the day, like rush hour. So my point is we need to start really looking, and we need to start shaking it up. We need to actually start demanding compliance to the Constitution. And one of the most important things is we got to start getting ready to actually start making local constitutions to actually fine-tune our state constitutions. We have several states that are ripe. And so this is what I want to impress upon you in the last minute here. We've got Wyoming, Iowa, and this is one of the reasons why I'm going to work with anybody that's running for office. If you're running for office, you want to be a constitutional champion in Iowa, call me. Wyoming, we're going to have some candidates that are actually calling me and I'm working with. South Dakota, the same thing. We need to start creating a competition within the states, and we need to start helping these people become the champions of the Constitution, because if we start leaning on the Constitution, we're going to force the conversations of what it takes to actually get the federal government into compliance. But you got to understand the Constitution before you can get people or even expect people to become compliant. So moving forward, we're going to be having a lot of, you know, shakeups. It'll seem like, wow, things are changing a bit on this show because it's usually content, content, content. We're doing this by design because the demands of today are demanding it. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.